What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back. Now we are joined by Talia and Julia Hart. I hope I've said that right. They are ex Great Britain skiers, which is on theme because I've just come back from a skiing trip where I was trying to be you. So thank you for joining us today, guys. How are yous?
Good, how are you? Thank you for having us.
Okay, first of all, who is Talia and who is Julia for the guests?
I'm Talia.
And I'm Julia.
Okay, nice to meet you guys. So first of all, we're going to get to know you very quickly. I'm going to ask you quick fire questions and I'm going to say, Talia, answer this. Julia, answer this. Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, cool.
First of all, Talia, three words to describe yourself.
Ooh. Energetic, bit loud. third one? Kind.
Oh, I love that. Sounds like me, guys. Three words to describe me. No, I love that. And would you... Okay, three words to describe yourself, Julia. Julia?
Okay. Yeah. Fun, energetic, and optimistic.
Oh, my God, I love that. Yes, girls. Okay. So, Talia, workout in the morning or evening?
Morning.
Fair enough, me too. Julia, what is your go-to cheat meal?
Oh, a massive, proper Italian pizza.
Oh, yeah, me too. Thin crust, one of those chunky bits on the outside. Well, don't get me talking about pizza. I absolutely love it. Okay, Talia, what is your workout anthem? Your favourite song to train to?
Oh, that's a very good one. I listen to the Disney Channel songs.
I bet you wouldn't think that, would you? Really?
Yeah, or like, do you know JoJo?
Yeah, get out right now.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah, I mean, I love that song as well. But I thought you were going to say, I actually listen to like drum and bass or something like that. I was like, no, I actually listen to Pocahontas' movie soundtrack. Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
And lastly, Julia, who is your dream workout partner? Obviously, apart from your sister.
Oh, that's a good one. Probably Lindsay Vonn, I'm going to say, or Michaela Schifrin.
Yeah.
Two massive faces in the ski journey.
Are they like your inspos then?
I mean, yeah, they do some... Well, Michaela Schifrin is still on the circuit and she is...
Incredible.
Yeah, she's got a big world record at the moment, and Vonn did amazing things when she was racing as well.
People like that are just not human, I don't think. I think they're like just avatars... Part alien.
My friend's only a year older than me as well. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, we all need to have someone to look up to, you guys. I'm sure loads of people look up to you as well. So speaking of which, how did you first get into skiing? Let's go with Talia answering that.
So our family actually took us on ski holidays when we were 2 years old.
Yeah, wow.
And then, so we were originally born in Scotland. We moved down to England and we joined a primary school that had a ski team, and they just said, does anyone ski? Like, we would like to start a race team on the dry slope circuit. And we said, yeah, we do. So
we started
that. And then
at 2 years old?
No. At 2 years old, we learned how to
ski. I was like, wait a minute. They must have been really good at two. Okay. So when you were older. Okay. Got it. Sorry.
Yeah. Like when we were about eight.
Okay, fine. Amazing.
So we joined the like school race team, and then we really liked it. Joined like a dry ski club sort of thing. They took us away abroad, and the rest is kind of history, to be honest.
That's amazing, though. I think we were saying this on my ski trip last week. There were so many like small children there as well, and I was like, yeah. Wow, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. But I think when you're thrown into it in a young age, you don't have any fear when you're younger, and you can, mm-hmm. you know, you just throw yourself around and probably throw yourself down the mountain faster than someone learning at my age would do. I can actually ski, but I was with some girls that had never skied before, and the fear that they experienced, and then they were like, I was in a beginner's class with children that were only as big as my knee, and I kept knocking them over. I was like, wow. So that's amazing. And was it one person that kind of led the other person more, or would you say that, like, did someone love it more, or was it like kind of a joint effort from the get-go?
I don't actually know, to be honest. So Jules has always been way less scared than I have. I like had to have my fear broken. So when I was about 10, someone basically sent me straight down a black slope. I either gonna be terrified or I'm either gonna love it, and I loved it, thank God.
Oh, amazing. There you go. All that time you've been thinking. Like, I think it's the fact that they have the colours on either side. I think if you didn't know, then you wouldn't, yeah, like, you know, it is fear-mongering, isn't it? That's what we're going to call it. Fear-mongering. I could do a black sleep as well, I reckon. I don't think good. Okay, so you represented Team Great Britain on multiple occasions in competitions. How amazing is that? What are the competitions like?
Intense. Yeah, insane, intense, to be honest.
As in, everyone's just mental?
So, like, everyone's really, really, really good and everyone's really competitive, and you're sometimes talking about competing against 140 girls that have trained as hard as you and as long as you and are, like, all vying for the one place that everyone wants, you know? So it's very intense and it's very competitive.
Right.
And obviously it's very different from when you're in Great Britain, where you don't have any mountains, you can't train on the mountains every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Training every day of the year. No, like,
it's like when you learn a language, it's better off to just go to the country, right?
Yeah.
So, Julia, your sister said that you had less fear than her. So would you say you're a bit of an adrenaline junkie? That black slope had your name written all over it, right?
100%. Yeah.
Really?
Always so, been like that.
And did that make you even more competitive when you got to these competitions? Because you're just like, listen, I know that you've been on the actual snow slopes all this time, but I can do just as good as you.
I mean, yeah, it definitely helps. But also, I think it helps that my sister's 4 years older than me. So to see her in, I guess, as we were training together, we were very competitive together. Yeah. So that also pushed me as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always been very competitive.
That's amazing, though. And that's half of the battle, isn't it? Just having that that within you. Because sometimes you can be someone that's really good at something, but if you don't have that inner kind of fight, that's what can hold you back. So, and also you've got your sidekick with you, so you two against the world. So Talia, you were first diagnosed with celiac disease in 2015, and did that when did you realize something wasn't right? Did it affect your training, or what was it that you know what was the telling tale?
So this is probably not one of the most talked about symptoms, but it affected my hormones more than anything. So if you saw...
Didn't know that they did
I
that.
I looked like I did not enjoy ski racing at all for a long while before my diagnosis, because I would be in the start gate of a race crying my eyes out because I couldn't control my emotions, but also I couldn't really see. So like the sort of outer bit of my eyes would always go foggy, and like I couldn't... There was no coordination, nothing. So like I was crying out of frustration probably, but also a little bit like I could not control any emotion. So there was quite a few signs that I wasn't okay for maybe a year or two before that.
Did you think it was just anxiety? Because I've never heard about celiac, like, forgive me for my ignorance, but I've never heard that celiac affects, like, I thought it was just kind of like a gut issue. I didn't realise it affects all those other things.
To be fair, you're not the first person to ask that. Someone told me to go and see a psychiatrist.
Really?
And someone that I think it was a chiropractor at the time, but my physiotherapist suggested that actually, because it's a gut issue, gut issues affect your mood and like
everything in life.
Anyway, so they suggested cutting out foods, and they thought it might be dairy at the beginning. So I cut that out, but I've got celiac in the family. So eventually we cut wheat out, we cut gluten out, and everything just sort of like immediately improved.
That's like, I think obviously straight away you probably didn't want to just like say, oh, it's celiac. No. You'd probably prefer it to be something else first of all. So you know, the psychiatrist could just tell you that you were anxious and you're like, great, sorted. But yeah, no, unfortunately we've got celiac. So you were also experiencing flare-ups was that what you were talking about during the winter 2014, was that when you had the little fogginess?
Yeah, so like it didn't always happen because obviously I was quite careful about what I was eating after that, but before that it would, yeah, I struggled to race most days.
So yeah, like trying to qualify for the Winter Olympics, and then that, like, you don't have any choice in that either, like, because you probably do have a bit of adrenaline and anxiety anyway, and then that added on top of that. I'm so glad that you eventually found out, so then at least you can just have the anxiety, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you do get nervous, so it made it way worse.
So Julia, you also have celiac disease, right?
Yeah, so we kind of found out at the same kind of similar time.
Yeah, she's not got the symptoms I have, and I'm very jealous.
Yeah, mine is a bit different. So I used to be quite competitive in my running.
Okay.
So I always had quite a lot of issues with my breathing. So I went through quite a lot with the doctors trying to find out if it was asthma. I was told that it was exercise-induced asthma. And then, like, nothing worked. I was on every steroid pump there was, and nothing improved my situation. I actually went and saw a specialist and ended up having, there's a test where you can have a camera that goes up your nose down to the back of your throat. And while you run, you can have it watch what your throat's doing.
As if running's not hard enough, just stick this down your throat. Jeez.
But yeah, so I had a couple of surgeries to help what was going on the back of my throat. And then I actually found out when my sister was going through the trial and error with the food that actually the food was triggering quite a lot of the problems as well. So yeah, you don't actually realize how much food really triggers.
Yeah, that's crazy.
In your body.
Because you would just automatically think if you were having like breathing difficulties, you would just think it was asthma, right? You wouldn't put two and two together. Yeah. It'd be that. But how frustrating it must have been when you're running, you're like, my legs aren't tired. It's just my lungs. How annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how does it affect you from day to day? Like, are you on like a pump, like some sort of not asthma pump, but celiac pump?
No, it's just literally just manage it by diet.
Wow. So what is it like
to be really cautious?
The main things that you've had to cut out is wheat, lactose. When did you find this out, by the way? 2014, so I'm going to win it. 10 years ago. Is that my maths? I'm like, this is why I do podcasts, guys. Not a mathematician.
It is just mainly wheat and gluten as a kind of, like for us, dairy was fine. So yeah, it's just being careful. Even going out for like meals at restaurants and stuff, you've got to be careful. Like, my sister's more, what's the word? Like, you're very sensitive.
Yeah.
Compared to me. So like, cross-contamination is even a massive thing when you go out. Whereas for me, I still be careful, but like, I wouldn't react in the same way. Like, you would be sick instantly.
Yeah,
wouldn't you,
if I eat something that's even got a little bit of gluten in, then I will be in the bathroom throwing up.
Oh no, that's so awful. Like, that must just like have such a... I mean, you've obviously managed it now for 10 years, but it must still be... I mean, it's just frustrating that you just can't lead a free life.
Yeah, especially when you see all the really good food.
Yeah.
And we come from a massive Italian family as well.
Oh my God, so you can't have the pizzas anymore? Oh my God, no. So question, does it help that both of you, I know that Julia, you don't get it as bad, but does it help that you both have the same condition? So at least like, at least one of you isn't just sitting eating pizza like, you can't eat this.
Yeah, I guess so, because then you're not like left out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who in the family does it also run in? You say it runs in the family. Is it your parents or is it further out than that?
So my cousin's actually got celiac. I'm pretty sure my mum's got celiac, but it's like undiagnosed because she's just gone gluten-free for us anyway.
Okay. Well, that helps, doesn't it? If it's not in the house, then there's no fear of cross-contamination.
Yeah.
So when and why did you decide to start your social media platforms?
That was like a lockdown thing. So we actually always had an Instagram page because of skiing. It just wasn't really getting used very much, or like wasn't getting used at all.
No.
Because the racing kind of side kind of stopped. And then in lockdown, when TikTok started to become a big thing, we always thought, oh, we'll download it, have a look. Like,
we're never going to use it.
Always thought it was like,
look
for,
at you
like
now.
Younger people. And then we just saw like challenges floating around that we were like, oh, let's try that. And then started posting it. And then it kind of just spiraled from there.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think what I loved about your page is that because there is two of you, you can offer so much more than just like one person. Like, I loved your like, you know, beginner advanced stuff. Because that is something that, you know, as a trainer, sometimes it's hard to be able to reach it to everybody, to, you know, offer something for everybody. So it's really good that you have that versatility. And also it means that there's not just one of you thinking of all the ideas all the time. Who is the person behind it? Like, is there someone that takes more control over it, or, you know, are you both in it together?
So you're more recipes.
Yeah.
And I'm a level 3 qualified personal trainer, so I'm more workouts. And then you post on Instagram and I post on TikTok.
We split.
We've
the...
like divided and conquered.
I need one of you. I need a sister like that. It's just, it's because it's so much to think about, isn't it? Yeah, especially yeah. like with the new, like I was the same with TikTok. I couldn't get my head around it because I just thought it was for younger people. But now it seems like everybody's just over there talking yeah. about crazy things. Like we've just been talking about a skin thing called slugging. Like what the hell is that? Look it up afterwards or listen to the podcast afterwards and you'll hear what it is. Okay, so has your relationship with sport and exercise changed since you had celiac? Like, did it really affect how you were training? Did that have anything to do with, like, not doing competing anymore? How has it affected you moving forward?
Yes and no. So it's a large factor of why we aren't competitive in ski racing anymore. It got to the point where before the diagnosis, it was a bit dangerous for me to be racing, maybe not you so much, but like if I couldn't concentrate nor really see going but like 60 miles an hour down a downhill race, it wasn't exactly safe for me.
Yeah. Oh, that's
so
sad.
Yeah, that is a large factor.
Yeah. And I'm getting deep now. Like, does that make you angry? But like, you know, or is it just something that you just took on the chin? You know, now you can use your platform in other ways, can't you?
I'm pretty sad about it still because, I mean, we dedicated half our life to it, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, we wouldn't have the channel and the community that we have if we didn't give up ski racing.
Yeah, exactly. So pros and cons.
It's a good and a bad thing.
Silver linings.
Sweet moment.
Yeah, it's good and it's bad.
Speaking of how long it took you to be diagnosed, you know, kind of doing the FODMAP diet, as it were, do you think there's enough awareness around things like celiac disease or polycystic ovaries? Like, do you think it's easy enough for people to figure out what it is, or do you think that it's just a long winded process for no reason?
I don't think there's enough awareness about either of them, to be honest. Celiac maybe more, because it's an autoimmune, I think people take it slightly more seriously, but there's still not really enough awareness around it. Polycystic ovarian syndrome, I had to, and this is not something that like everyone's got access to, but unfortunately I had to go private to get my diagnosis.
Same.
That's the only way that I was getting it, unfortunately. So, and I was lucky that I got that.
Yeah.
But that was from another separate problem. Like I've got NASH, which is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So I actually got my PCOS diagnosis from that.
It's crazy, isn't it? Like, was that from an MRI or something?
No, so I actually...
MRI?
I was competing at the time and I had different issues. So I just got like a blood test done and they were like, yeah, you have something wrong with your liver. Can you go see about that? So I went and saw about that and then something else popped up and I got referred to about 8 different people.
Oh, bloody hell. It's been a journey.
Yeah.
Do you feel better now, though? Are you like on the road to full recovery and feel... healthy,
yeah,
optimal.
I have been for a while.
That's great.
It's a process, right? It's never going to go away. I can't ever get rid of the liver problem and I can't ever get rid of PCOS. So you manage it every day, but yeah, it's fine now.
You just have to make the best out of a bad situation, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're so both very inspiring and it was absolutely my pleasure to meet you today. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about yourselves. I wish you all
Thank
the best
for
the future.
Us.
And I will be doing your workouts. I'm going to actually probably copy a few, so watch this space. Thank you, girls. Have a great day, and I will see you
soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
FUBAR Radio presents... What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it. Like I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them like a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common. What was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner
on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip that actually we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one.
How funny.
I was like, hang on, you know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take out, I don't have £1,000, will you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs?
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling. So for me to very place us out there would be pretty, you know, pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke, and I said I would because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician
sure.
of any moral
standing. We should also talk about
standing.
Cryptocurrency, which also is very yeah. problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
We have Dr. Milad Shadru. Is that how you say it? Yeah, good. Otherwise known as the singing dentist. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Woo, woo, woo. Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. First of all, I have to ask you.
Yes.
How did it start? Was it with your rendition of, what's it, Ed Sheeran's song?
Yes.
What was it called?
That was Shape of You, otherwise known as Save Your Tooth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to sing it for us today? Can't remember it.
I haven't warmed up, you see.
Okay, fair enough. You know.
And I'm terrible live. No, so actually that wasn't the first one. It started randomly in 2016. And then I've got a background in music and obviously I am a dentist. I'm an actual dentist.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I just freestyled one day in the clinic when a patient didn't turn up and I started just rapping about root canals and how no one likes them. To the song, which was Hotline Bling by Drake at the time.
Oh, well, yeah. Everyone loves that song.
Everyone loves it.
So do people now come to you because they hated the dentist before and now they feel like you will make it easier for them to
exactly
go through
that.
It?
Exactly.
Really?
That. Yeah, because I think dentistry has this like thing where people are nervous about it, they don't like it. It's not usually a pleasurable experience, right? So because I've been able to kind of bring some fun into it and it's educational and jokes, they feel like they know me as like a normal dude. So then when they come in, they feel a bit more comfy.
I think maybe because like from watching your content, you feel like you're just like relatable. You're just the same as me, but obviously a lot smarter. And, you know, people think, okay, well, at least he's just like normal and he's not like this really serious guy sat in glasses just like, yes, take a seat.
Exactly.
He's your green juice.
The green juice. Yeah, so that's the stigma with dentistry, right? That's what people think. But actually, then there's a new generation of dentists coming up who are in this social media world.
Cool,
and,
young.
Man, honestly, the landscape of dentistry is changing. And also because more and more people are way more dentally aware now because they're more cosmetically aware, they're more aesthetically aware. So, and teeth is a massive part of it. On any kind of show nowadays, people check for teeth. What do you look for in a bloke? Oh, he's got to have nice teeth. Literally, it's like the second or third or first thing they say, right? So because we're so aesthetically aware, people are seeking dentistry a lot more.
Yeah.
Therefore, attitudes will inevitably change.
Well, it's great for you.
It
you're
is.
Best of both worlds now. Now you're a rapper and you're also a dentist, so you're hitting it from both sides.
That's it.
Okay, so talking about teeth, obviously. Yes. Teeth whitening strips seem to be very popular on social media.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about them? Do you think they're effective? Are they good for you, bad for you?
Okay, so teeth whitening strips. There's something we have to distinguish between kind of proper strips and mm-hmm. what we can do in the UK, right? So because there's laws around the active ingredient, which is peroxide, it's a derivative of peroxide. In the UK, we can't use very strong peroxide at all in direct to consumer products. From the dentist, yes, I can give you all the good stuff.
Okay.
But for you to go and buy it from a chemist or an online
like over
retailer,
the counter.
Over the counter,
yeah, yeah.
You can't. It has to have a specific amount. In America, completely
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm.
So there are these strips that everybody infamously knows and they like to buy from America.
Mm.
They're super effective because they've got like the proper high level of peroxide. They can be quite sensitive because they're doing a proper whitening job. The ones that we can sell here, they will only really be good at removing staining off the outside of your teeth. So if your teeth have got darker because you smoke or you drink a lot of tea or coffee or red wine or eat loads of curry and loads of turmeric stuff, your teeth will have external staining. The whitening strips you can buy are good at taking that off.
Okay.
So you go back to your original color, but you won't get whiter than your original color. If you want whiter, then you've got to see the dentist and get the proper stuff.
Okay. Yeah, because I've had my teeth whitened before at the dentist and that hurts.
Yeah, it can be sensitive.
Whereas at home, I'm like looking for that pain.
Nice.
But you know what I mean?
No pain, no gain.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So that's the thing. And same with toothpaste, same with the other stuff you can buy over the counter. All the whitening stuff is only ever strong enough to get the external staining off. It's never going to actually change your color, make it whiter than the original.
Okay, so for people at home, for the obvious, cut out coffee, smoking, curries. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, we all love a curry, but like turmeric-based stuff. But is there any like anything that you would recommend for people that want to whiten their teeth at home? Apart from the strips, what can they do?
So, yeah, avoiding the stainy stuff. And it's not even like having to cut it out. It's just reducing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that can help. The whitening products, like I said, they're going to be better at removing the staining off the outside. There are some home remedies that fly around social media and people talk about it, like baking soda or bicarbonate of soda or like rubbing lemons on your teeth and getting strawberries and rubbing that on and stuff like that. Yes, they have acid and they might be good at it, but they're going to damage your teeth massively. And same with like baking soda and stuff like that. It's just very abrasive.
Mm.
So you are essentially pumicing your teeth. You're kind of rubbing
like
the enamel
sandpaper.
Away. Yeah, sandpaper. Yeah, you're just kind of scratching the surface, which actually can be very damaging.
Mm.
And then there's the whole charcoal thing. That was super popular for a while. That came out. Again, it's just because it's abrasive. It's going to get rid of the staining. It's not going to whiten your teeth.
Right, okay.
Right? And then there's coconut oil thing that people say you can do coconut oil pulling. Have you tried that? It's hideous.
It feels
it's
like it would just be so like
it is,
tacky.
It is. It's kind of really oily, not very nice. And you've got to hold it in your mouth for like 20 minutes.
I know, but these days, coconut oil for everything.
Yeah.
Break up, coconut oil. You know what I mean? It's literally like anything and everything.
Yeah. So there are little things you can do to help reduce the staining, like we said. But really, if you want to get the whitening done, speak to your dentist because it's safe, it's predictable. It will definitely work. It will definitely get your teeth whiter and it's not going to damage them.
I'm now like thinking, hang on a minute. I should have brushed my teeth an extra couple of times here.
To be fair, they look all right from this angle.
Thank you very much. I paid a lot of money for them. Yours are gorgeous as well.
I'll stop it.
Okay. So what are the biggest dental misconceptions that you come across?
Wow. There's quite a lot, I think, of what people think they should do or they shouldn't do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one that is really good is use of mouthwash. People will either use it or they won't. And the ones that do use it will use it immediately after brushing. And that's actually not the time to use mouthwash.
Is it after you have a curry?
Possibly.
Yeah.
That might not be a bad idea.
You kind of like combat it, you know?
Yeah, there you go. So it's you should be using it at a completely separate time because toothpaste has got loads of good stuff in it. So when you brush your teeth with toothpaste, there's another one. Spit, don't rinse. Mm-hmm. So what that means is you brush your teeth.
And then what kind of show this is today.
You spit out all of the foam, but then you don't rinse your mouth with water after. So you leave the toothpaste residue on your teeth because the stuff in the toothpaste will continue protecting it for up to 30 minutes.
Oh.
But then if you rinse with mouthwash straight away, you're just going to wash all that stuff off.
Right.
So that's why I use the mouthwash at a separate time. So that when you get home from work or midway through the day, if you've got a little one with you at work, just have a little swish. You get an extra hit of the good stuff.
That's a great top tip. I hope you've got three more because I'm going to ask you for some in a bit.
I've got loads.
Okay, great. Question.
Yes.
This is just for myself, with your mouthwash. Mm-hmm. So once you've done your mouthwash, you shouldn't then mouthwash with water afterwards.
No. So
for
again,
God's sake, I've been doing it wrong all this time.
So again, you rinse, spit out, and then don't rinse. So then you're leaving the good stuff of the mouthwash on your teeth.
Okay, fine. Great. How old am I? 32 next week, and I'm sorry, I've been doing it wrong all the time. Okay, so how bad is sugar for your teeth?
Ooh. Okay, so sugar itself isn't bad. Like if you had a tooth extracted out the mouth and you just dumped it in some sugar, nothing's really going to happen to it. The issue is the bacteria in your mouth.
Okay.
So you need four things to get tooth decay. You need a tooth, you need time.
Yeah.
Then you need bacteria, and then you need sugar. So bacteria, plaque. We all have plaque in our mouth. Plaque is basically like a sticky white film of bacteria.
Mm.
You can't avoid it. It builds even 2-3 minutes after you brush your teeth. It's just part of your mouth. What you can do is reduce it, though, and keep making sure you're effectively cleaning it and removing it off your teeth with good brushing, good flossing in between your teeth, because that bacteria eats the sugar that you eat. So every time you eat sugar, the bacteria eats the sugar. And their byproduct is acid. So they eat sugar, they poo out acid. And it's that acid that burns holes in your teeth. And it's that acid that gives you cavities.
Okay.
So what you want to do is reduce the frequency of the sugar. Not so much the amount. it's the frequency, how often you're putting sugar in your mouth. Because every time you put sugar in your mouth, the bacteria will eat it and they'll release acid. So your teeth will come under an acid attack.
So sad, isn't it? Because I absolutely love sugar.
That's it. Well, look, chocolate. You're allowed it 4 times a day. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack.
Yeah.
I'm giving you 4 hits.
Okay, fine.
Don't abuse that.
Okay, fine.
So there you go. So here's the thing. So if you want to have chocolate, have it around lunchtime because you're already going to have some carbs. You're already going to have some sugar in your food, right? Unless you're on a really strict diet.
Yeah.
So there's going to be carbs floating about. There's going to be acid getting released. And the way acid works, you've got a pH scale, right?
Yeah.
7 is neutral, 14 is alkaline, 0 is acid. Mm-hmm. Once you get to 0, it's not going to go below that. So you're already in an acidic environment. So if you add a little bit more chocolate in there as like a dessert, it's not going to make much
difference.
Now, when it peaks back up, you neutralize, let's say 20 minutes, 30 minutes after you've eaten, you mash the chocolate then. You just plumb it into acidity again.
Oh, okay. So you like, have it at like, the same time.
Yeah. And also mash all of it in one go. Like, listen, I like Haribo.
Yes, it's
kids and grown-ups love it so. Yeah.
Like he can eat the whole bag in one go.
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
But that's what you got to do. Eat the whole bag in one go. Because if you just have, you know, you have a little Coca-Cola bottle and then like 5 minutes later you have a little heart and then you have a little ring.
So
other
like
sweets are available, by the way. But yeah, you just constantly dip in the sugar.
Okay.
You see the acid.
Okay.
One go.
So 2 things I've learned today. When you brush, don't mouthwash straight afterwards.
Yes.
Wait. But
yes.
If you're going to eat your chocolate or your sweets or your sugar, eat it all in one go. Perfect.
Bang.
Done.
2 for 2.
Okay. Other top tips for maintaining good oral hygiene.
Okay.
Give me
so.
3.
3 tips.
Yeah.
Okay, number 1, use a really good toothbrush. Do not underestimate the effectiveness of a good brush compared to the ineffectiveness of a cack brush. Okay, from when the brush starts looking all inverse and like the splayed out, it's really ineffective. It's not actually any good. So you do have to change your brush every 2 months and make sure you've got a fresh one. Now, I recommend electric toothbrushes because they do a lot of the brushing for you. They do the cleaning for you, that you don't press too hard, you're not going to damage your gums, and they're really effective at oscillating and vibrating the plaque off your teeth.
Yeah.
So good brushing habit, number
double
1.
Double whammy, brush and vibrate.
That's it.
Try and like do it at the same time.
Just
just like that.
That's the exact technique. Second thing is you have to clean in between. See, it rhymed. You see where the bars are coming out?
Yeah, no, see.
You see
that's
why. Dropping bars. So you got to clean. You got to clean in between. Now, whether that's flossing, whether that's using the little pokey brushes, depending on the gap of your teeth, right? So your hygienist or your dentist or your therapist, dental therapist can go through what is best for your mouth because everyone's different. But you have to clean in between because toothbrushing alone doesn't get between
the
teeth.
Just the surface.
That's it. It just gets the front and the back.
Right.
So you've got to get in between.
Fine.
It's like having a shower, not cleaning your armpits.
Yep.
No one wants that.
Okay.
You got to get, you've got to clean the pits of the teeth.
Okay, number 3, hit me quick.
And number
go.
3, sugar frequency. We talked about it already, but reduce the frequency of sugar. That's really, really key.
I love that. I feel like I've learned so much today. Thank you so much.
You're
next time
welcome.
You see me, they're going to be even brighter.
Oh.
I'm going to be ringing my dad.
I'll have to come in with sunglasses.
Yeah, you will. Or I'll come and see you. You
come
can do them
me,
for
right?
me.
Anytime. Pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank
it's
you.
Been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And next time, I want you to come vocally warmed up.
Ready.
Ready. With shape of you, save the tooth.
With some kind of parody.
Yeah.
I'll come ready.
Thank
it won't
you.
Be shabby next time I'm with Gabby.
Perfect. Thank you so much, love. It was great to meet you. Take care.
Likewise.
Keeping fitness fun. What the health with Gabby Allen.
Welcome back. This week, I'm joined by Michael Grieve, founder of Forever Healthy Foundation. Michael, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Oh, totally well, yes. Really, really nice here in Baden-Baden. So, yeah.
Better than it is here in London. I came out today without an umbrella. I was like, what is my life?
Yeah, that's London for you. What do you expect?
I know, literally. So, okay, I just want to get to know you a bit quickly. So I want you to answer these questions as quick as you can with short answers just so we can break the ice, okay? Give me 3 words to describe yourself.
I'm a techie. I'm a futurist and I love snowboarding.
Oh, I love it. I've just come back from skiing. Loved it.
Oh, yeah.
What was your dream job as a kid?
Exactly what I'm doing now, like playing with technology.
I love that. How amazing is that? Okay, so would you work out in the morning or the evening?
Morning.
Yeah, same. What's your go-to cheat meal?
Oh, cheat meal is spaghetti.
Spaghetti? Spaghetti bolognese?
Yes, absolutely.
I always find that so interesting, people's different cheat meals. Okay, and lastly, what is your workout anthem?
Oh, actually, it's some really chill music because I usually do yoga, and then I have some meditation music playing.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. Okay, so let's talk about what made you want to set up the Forever Healthy Foundation.
Well, it's really personal interest. The idea of Forever Healthy is to accelerate the transition to a world without any age-related diseases. And I came to this really out of personal interest. So at one point in my life, I was living super unhealthy. I mean, when we're building my companies, I was overweight. I was smoking 3 packs of cigarette a day. No sports. Well, everything there. And at some point, I decided to change my life, and I really want to become healthy. And I changed my diet. I started working out and all that stuff. And I really also learned everything about biohacking, then about functional medicine, and then. Over time, you really come to the point where you understand that no matter how good you work out, how much your diet is nice, how much you sleep and all that stuff, you will still suffer of age-related diseases once you age. And then I started to get into the science of that because it really interested me. And I started funding research in that space because I learned that there's a new field of medicine emerging that is called rejuvenation biotechnology, and that has the goal to really reverse or prevent all age-related diseases such as cancer, heart attack, stroke, all the nasty stuff that comes with aging. And and I was really super successful. I built several large-scale tech companies here in Germany on my own. Wow. I went into venture capital after that. I helped create 3 of really super heavyweight internet companies after that in Germany. And so I was really successful, and that was the point, okay, what do I do now? And now I use my fortune and my wealth to really help to accelerate this transition and to create products in that space.
Okay, so question, am I going to live forever with your new technology?
This is not about living forever. Even the universe will not live forever. This is really about, basically, it's about extending a healthy lifespan. And one side effect of that probably will be that we're going to live longer. How much longer, we don't know. In the first step, it's like really eliminating age-related diseases like heart attack, stroke, cancer, loss of immune function, loss of muscle function, loss of eyesight, loss of hearing, everything that comes when you're aging. Because that happens gradually over time, and at a certain point, it gets faster and faster. And we just want to extend the time where people are healthy. Hopefully, that might also extend the lifespan by, I don't know, decades. Who knows? Mm.
Yeah, I like that. So not necessarily living longer, but just living a long, healthy life.
I mean, I always reverse the question, you know, when people ask me, well, how long do you want to live, you know? And I say, well, imagine you wake up in the morning, the sun is shining, the girl of my dreams is at my side, and it's not the first thought that I have, oh my God, today would be a good day for a cancer diagnosis, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I just want to go back. What was the pinnacle moment that you stopped smoking 60 ciggies a day?
I was in St. Moritz snowboarding, and I had a snowboard teacher, and he was a young guy, and he was super healthy and totally fit. And we were at dinner, and he told me, well, you know, Michael, like 3 years ago, I was living like shit. I was drinking. I was like smoking cigarettes. I could not climb a mountain anymore. And I had decided to change. And I really liked that guy. And I said, oh, what he can do, I can do that too. And in that moment, I stopped smoking.
How amazing that you were inspired by someone, but now you are inspiring. So tell me, what is the most excitement development you've had so far? What is the foundation currently researching?
Okay, so basically we have 3 main initiatives that we're doing. One is we are funding research projects on the root causes of aging that have translational potential. That means that can be translated into therapies for humans. That's one thing. The other thing is we help to create companies in that space, and we have invested so far in 16 companies that develop actual therapies. And the most exciting company of my babies is one where we are working on to eliminate the root cause of like 3/4 of all heart attacks and strokes. And if that works out, 3/4 of all heart attacks and strokes don't have to happen anymore by just swallowing a simple pill every now and then. And we are going to start clinical phase one in humans this year. So I think in about 2 years from now, we know that this will work, whether this will work or not.
Okay, so question, first of all, about the anti-aging therapy. I need to know about this. So what, when you're saying about these aging therapies, what would that involve? How does that work?
Okay, so basically all these therapies that, that people are working on in our space, they try to go for root causes. So you ask yourself, why is something happening? Why do I have a certain age-related disease? And then you go, it's a cascade, you know, and you try to get back to the root of the, to the start of the cascade and to repair that. And in the case, for example, of heart attack, most heart attacks happen because you build up soft plaque in your arteries, walls, due to lifestyle, but also to, due to genetics. So it's a process that everybody has. You can, to some extent, influence the speed of the build-up by your lifestyle. But if you have bad genetics or even if you have good lifestyle, people build up that plaque. And at a certain point of time, it's too much. The artery ruptures to the inside and then you get a heart attack. Basically, you get a blood clot. And we have developed a medication, basically, that's in the end, it's going to be a pill that you swallow. It goes into your bloodstream. It goes in the artery wall. And it grabs the oxidized cholesterol from the plaque and it just takes it out of the cell and you basically pee it out. And when you don't have plaque in the arteries, you won't get a heart attack.
Wow.
And what we are basically doing, this is a good example for rejuvenation because a young person doesn't have that plaque. So we're reverting the cardiovascular system of an old person to the state of a young person in that space.
Oh my God, that's amazing. And how close are you to getting this... is that what you're going to be clinically trialing for the first phase next?
Yes, the first clinical trial for this will start this year. And it's going to be a small trial. It's called phase one, where you basically test for toxicity. So you do an extensive testing, of course, in animals and simulation and all that stuff. And that's safe. We know that now. And so we are allowed to move to humans this year. And then you have a phase two trial, which is a bigger trial with maybe like 100 people or so, where you really try whether, where you look whether it's really working or not. And that's going to happen then in 2 years from now or so. And
so that's how you test it.
It will work.
So that's how you test if it's working. You monitor the amount of cholesterol buildup.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow, that's so amazing. I hope it's passed by the time I get to the age that I would start taking it, because
I hope so. I mean, I want to use it myself, so it's, as I said,
yeah,
it's super selfish. I mean, everybody ages. The interesting thing that you have to understand is that everybody has, because aging is not a single process. Aging is a lot of different processes happening at the same time. We don't even know how many there are. We just know the first ones, and people are trying to work for repair strategies for those. But everybody has all the aging processes. So everybody has all the aging, the same processes.
Yeah, all unfortunately.
At a different speed. So this is for one person, when you really get old, you have a deficiency of the immune system and you might die of lung disease. The other one has a heart attack. The third one has a stroke. But basically, we all have these processes going on. So everybody needs to take care of plaque. Everybody needs to take care of cancer and so forth.
Yeah. Well, I really do hope that you get to figure it out, because otherwise you're doing all of this research and you won't even get to bloody use it yourself. So
Absolutely. Talk
to me about what you do personally to extend your life then.
Okay. Well, the sobering news is that there are no real rejuvenation therapies right now. So what you can do right now is basically it's the stuff that your grandma already told you. I know people don't want to hear it, but it's like exercise, sleep, your nutrition, have a decent diet, you know. Don't smoke, moderate use of alcohol, have a good social life, have close friends, have a purpose in life. That's also super important. Do something that you're really passionate about, laugh, enjoy life in a positive way. And then there are a few things that you can do to slow down the rate of aging, for example, like using red light therapy for your skin or stuff like this. Yeah. but that's about it. You know, the real things will come in 5 to 10 years where you actually really can turn back the clock, the aging clock, and return parts of your body to a younger state. This is coming.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask you. I was just about to say, what changes do you think you'll see in the field of medicine for anti-aging, not just for your skin, but in the next 10 to 15 years? But now you've just said it's in the next 5 years. That's amazing.
Well, yeah, I think that if the for example, our anti-heart attack therapy, we're going to know whether it works or not, like in 2 to 3 years. And then it's probably another 3 years or so, or 4 years, we don't really know exactly, until you get the approval from the regulators and it's going to be available at doctors. But it's not going to be 10 years. So it's going to be definitely less than 10 years. And the third thing also that we're doing is in order to advance the whole industry, because personally, I believe we not only need a single therapy, we need lots of therapies, lots of people working on it.
Yeah.
So our goal is to accelerate the creation of this super young industry. And therefore, we run a conference in Berlin. It's called the Rejuvenation Startup Summit. And it's going to happen in May. Again, and it's the largest gathering of startups from the rejuvenation space, and we're going to have more than 40 CEOs from these companies on stage explaining what they're doing, how the therapies they're what therapies they're developing, and it is super amazing to see what people are working on, like radical breakthroughs in cancer therapy. There's a good chance that most cancers are treatable in 10 years from now. It's really exciting, because I mean I personally had so many cancer cases in my family, and everybody knows somebody who dies of cancer, and that really sucks, you know. And then if we can do something about that, then there's cardiovascular aging. A quarter of Of everybody dying, we have about 150,000 people dying every day. So 50,000 of those are dying of catastrophes, murder and wars and what's going on. But 100,000 people every day die of age-related diseases. And of those 100,000, 80% die just of four things that happen. That's first, it's cardiovascular disease like heart attack and stroke. It's cancer. It's neurodegenerative diseases like dementia and Alzheimer. And it is age-related diabetes and cancer.
Yeah. So
basically, for all these four things are under development, that will dramatically reverse that. I mean, we will not be able to, like, in 10 years from now, to turn a 70-year-old person back to 30.
Yeah, but, like a time traveler.
Yeah, but you see, there's an interesting statistic. So, for example, if you would cure all cancer, the average life expectancy would only increase by 2 to 3 years over the whole population.
Mm.
That's one thing, yeah? But on an individual level, if you have a cancer diagnosis, it's everything. Yes. Or if you have a heart attack, you know, the difference is between 0 and 1, because either you're dead at 55 with a heart attack or you're still alive. So in average, it's only 2 to 3 years. But on a personal level, it means whether you have another 20 or 30 healthy years, or you're just not there anymore.
So can I ask you about... With these new developments and stuff, are they going to be, I think I heard you say that they will be available at the doctors. Are they going to be available for the mass population, or is it going to be quite an expensive therapy?
That's a very good question, and that's really nice that you answer that, because people, you usually assume this is only going to be for the rich. But exactly the opposite is going to happen. It's because with all these new technologies, you see, for example, take our therapy to remove the oxidized cholesterol and the plaque from the arteries. Yeah, you have to understand, you can only patent the exact way to do it exactly in the way we do it. We can have a patent on that. But you cannot have a patent on the idea of removing the plaque in one way or the other to prevent heart attacks. So If the first company proves that it's possible, there are going to be lots of companies coming in and saying, hey, we can do this maybe in a better way. So you have healthy competition on that. The other thing is that everybody over the age of like 35 or 40 builds up plaque. So your target market, if you want to say for prevention, is half of the global population. So you have 4 billion people wanting your therapy. Mm-hmm. And to set an example, we are with Cyclarity, and this is we want to demonstrate this is going to happen. Our marketing pitch is $10 per month, no heart attack, no stroke. This is what we are striving for. This is that sounds like a good deal, or
that sounds like a great deal. I'm 35 in 3 years' time, and I will be knocking on your door, going, "Give me that pill." That's when it's ready as well.
This is going to be the reality. So, and with all technology, if you have such a huge market and if you have competition, this means the price will go down and the quality will go up of the products. And I mean, look at mobile phones. You know, in the beginning, they were super expensive, like 6,000 euros or D-mark by then. You could only place a phone call, super complicated, like a size of two bricks, you know?
Yeah, with the big icon.
Every child in Africa has a mobile phone, an Android phone, that gives you access to the knowledge of the whole planet, yeah?
Yeah.
And that's what technology is doing for you. And this is going to be exactly the same for the rejuvenation biotechnology, yeah?
I'm so excited that there's people like you in the world. Thank you for doing everything that you do, because, as I said, when I'm not getting any younger and I'm doing everything I possibly can on my own. So it's good to know that there's people like you doing proper work, not just Botox, to help me stay young. Thank you so much for joining in today. It's been absolute, so educational, so inspiring to talk to you. And I really can't wait to see what the future brings for you.
Cool.
Thank you so much, my love. Take care. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
FUBAR Radio presents Access
All Areas. We have the absolute icon, legend, Janice Dickinson.
I'm here.
Do you still enjoy doing reality shows, or do you now see it as more of like a part of your job that you like have to do?
I do really enjoy it. I don't enjoy the actuality of eating fish eyeballs.
Well, yeah, that's that side to Amazon.
Or gonads, or vagina of cow.
Yeah.
But you do like the sort of social side, do you? Like just the
social side was fantastic. Just getting to know people and sleeping with people and eating with people when we didn't really have enough food.
Access All Areas.
Every Wednesday.
FUBAR Radio.
Moving on to listener questions. Dawn asks, what are your thoughts on barefoot shoes for lifting? Would you recommend using them, or should I just lift barefooted? Okay. Barefoot shoes over barefoot, because there's so many things that can go wrong if you have barefoot in the gym. You could trip over something, you could stump your toe, which nobody wants to do. It's the worst pain in the history of mankind. You can drop something on your toe. Somebody else could drop something on your toe. If you have shoes on, whether they're barefoot lifting shoes or any other shoes, you have that extra layer of protection against the stubbed toe. That's my first thing. And then I would also say the barefoot shoes are created so you have more, like, basically so you can spread your toes and so your feet and your toes can move how they are physically, like, designed to do. So they are great in that respect, but I wouldn't therefore say it's barefoot shoes or nothing. You can get so many other shoes that also provide the same or similar service as a shoe. For example, I wear a Nike Metcon 5. It enables me to spread my toes. It also is flat enough that I am essentially, if I didn't have the shoe on, I would be in the same position with my feet, and it gives me the stability to therefore lift heavy weights. But I wouldn't necessarily use them for running. For running, I would use a Nike Zoom, which is different. If you look at the bottom of a Nike Zoom, they are almost like ice skates. They're like so like slimmer, and that's for streamline. That and they're bouncy cushioned soles, so you know you go faster. It's a completely different kind of shoe to the Nike Metcon 5. So essentially, in a nutshell, which I'm not very good at doing, but in a nutshell, barefoot shoes are great, but you can also find the same effect from other flat trainers too. Moving on to Miranda's question. What are your thoughts on waist trainers? Okay, so the thing is with waist trainers is people get in their heads that they're just going to create you a waist and, you know, give you the hourglass figure, which might be true if you wear a really tight one for a long amount of time. But I wouldn't recommend it, as it's not good to wear something compressing you in your center at all times. Yes, it can encourage you to sweat more and therefore make you burn more calories. However, it can't specifically target belly fat. Unfortunately, nothing apart from liposuction can target belly fat, and we do not recommend that on this show. But it's also waist trainers can also be used as a kind of method to not overeat, because obviously if you put a corset on and you're sat here and you try and eat a big meal, it's going to be physically impossible because you are actually confined. Your space in your stomach is confined. So there's pros in that way. But I would actually just say to you, if you're looking for a smaller waist, there's so many ab exercises that you can do, rotational movements that will help you trim your waist. And also it all comes down to your body fat percentage and getting yourself in a deficit and losing the weight. That is how I would recommend to do it over a waist trainer, but each to their own. And moving on to my third and final question, can you explain progressive overload, what it actually is, how to do it effectively? And he says, I feel like I see everyone talking about it, but when I get to lift heavier, I can't. So progressive overload, what is it? It's essentially, if you have a structure program for, say, 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, you work on the same exercises from week to week and you gradually increase your weight, your rep volume, as in you add reps, or you add in things like a pulse or a pause that can also make the exercise harder. So that is essentially it. Annie, you don't always have to add weight in order to progressively overload. The whole point in doing it is to increase strength, increase muscle mass, and, you know, get the gains. But it kind of depends on what you're looking for. I would say for somebody that is trying to get stronger and build muscle mass, you would be looking at increasing your weight over time. But that doesn't have to be jumping from a 10 kg to a 15 kg. You can do it by literally 1 kg per time, and that shouldn't also be week by week. If it takes you 3 weeks to get to that point, fine. Everybody's different, and also depends on what you're eating, how well you're rested, what your recovery was like. There's so many contributing factors, but essentially I would say if you can't add weight initially, try adding a little pulse or a little pause, as that automatically makes a rep harder, or increase how many reps you're doing. So eventually, I reckon if you say, well, let's go for an overhead shoulder press, you've got 8 kg. The next week you try, you can still only really do 8 to 12 reps, 12 rep being your max one at 8 kg. Stick with it, but add a pause. And I can guarantee you within 2 weeks' time, you probably won't be able to do the pause anymore, but you'll be able to add a kg or two. So I hope that helps. And it was amazing answering your questions today. We've had so many in, and these were just some of the favourite ones. So make sure that if you're listening and you enjoyed these answers, you send them in to What The Health Show on DM, and we will try and get back to as many as we can. Maybe we'll do 4 next week. We'll see how much time we have. But I think today's show was so amazing. Like, a group of really inspiring women. It's so great to speak to females that make me want to do and be better. And I've just asked the team if we can like extend the show, because there were so many questions I wanted to ask. So we'll just have to get them back on. But I hope you enjoyed it as well. And as always, it's been a pleasure being your host today. I will see you again next week for another amazing show. Lots of love.